This is the Hidden Killers podcast with Tony Brisky,
featuring former FBI special agent and chief of the Counterintelligence Behavioral Analysis Program, Robin Dreek.
13-year-old Maddie Soto just celebrated her birthday over the weekend, just a few weeks back. Was with family, got presents according to mom, had a great day. The next day, according to mom and her partner, went to school. We took her to school that morning. Oh, wait, another interview. He took her to school. And then it's we, and then it's I saw her, and then it's he did it. He took her to school. And it was at this certain time. But wait a second. Video surveillance shows the partner, one who's been arrested as of right now, Stefan Stearns, throwing away Maddie's backpack and book bag in a dumpster earlier than what they said she would have been dropped off at school. Oh, and by the way, there's no surveillance video of her being dropped off at school. That was peddled by mom for a while, but it turns out it doesn't exist. There is, however, surveillance video showing what appears to be Maddie's body in the vehicle of Stephen Stearns on that moment where she was supposedly going to school. Maddie's mom, Jen Soto, well, she's full of conflicting stories on exactly what happened. Joining me to discuss, Robin Dreek, retired FBI special agent. I got to paraphrase or timestamp this because we're recording this prior to any further arrests in this case. As of our recording, Jen Soto has not faced any sort of charges, is assumed innocent and not even a suspect at this moment in time. But I don't know how long that's going to last.
So, this is such another horrendous case because we have sexual abuse of a child.
Yes. Well, let's add that in there too. Yeah.
That is, you want to say thankfully, the cops were able to find that on the phone of the partner. Mm-hmm. So they're able to arrest him based on that. Yeah. So what I've seen and what the stats will say in situations like this, these horrendous situations in general, again, we're doing a paintbrush here of a behavior arc of this type of situation, not necessarily these individuals. And so we'll just caveat that, is that when women have daughters, especially, obviously, and sometimes boys too, have their own trauma they've been through in life, and they're flipping between partners sometimes, and they have a life arc of hooking up with guys that are sexual abusers of their children, they tend to make a lot of excuses for bad behavior. They are so traumatized themselves that they are conflicted. They don't want to believe what's going on, even if their children are telling them what's going on or hinting at it. There's a lot of fear. There's a lot of trauma bonding, as we've talked about before, going on here. And so this behavior arc is common. If when this happens. Now, here's what's really interesting to me, Tony. I was watching the interview of both of them, and here's where she talks about her daughter in the present tense after she was already dead. Mm-hmm. That is really key and critical, so that she was not, from my quick analysis of her statements and his statements and the interview that we watched, was that she was unaware that her daughter was dead. All she knew is her daughter was missing. I think that the conflict we're seeing in her and her statements was she's trying to continually hide what's going on what she doesn't want to acknowledge on the sexual abuse side.
Okay.
And I don't think she's aware of the fact that her daughter's dead, because she really, so people that are witting of someone being deceased and they're trying to hide it, again, these things fall apart sometimes, but in general, they talk about the person and slips. They talk about the person in the past tense. Mm-hmm. And she even said the mother talked about her daughter in the present tense, and she indicating she didn't know she was dead by, supposedly, possibly by her partner's hand or someone else's.
And that's a good point. But at the same point, she also seemed to mix up if it was we or he or whatnot of what they were doing.
It's hiding.
And when the last time that she saw Maddie as well. In one interview, it was the night before she supposedly went to school. The next one, it was that morning, saw her getting dressed, even said, I love you, have a good day. Conflicting, completely different stories.
Yep.
And I get, everyone goes through grief differently. You know, to me, I mean, it's my personal, I guess, opinion. I've never had a missing child. But if I did, I would think that time when they're missing is going to be the worst, because it's the not knowing. It's the scary, oh my God, what is happening here? And I'm not a body language expert, but I play one on TV. But I talk to many of them. So I guess I'm a little bit more educated than the layman on it, but just everything that we saw with her, it didn't read to be that of a grieving mother or a mother who was even thinking that her daughter was going to return. One of the points that she even made, she verbally said, I believe in the Fox 35 interview, she was being asked, you know, where are they searching? They said, oh, down by this river. They got a team down there, and her response is, yeah, I don't think they're going to find anything. I mean, why aren't you out there looking, number one? I mean, why aren't you boots on the ground? But number two, why on earth would you be saying that if you genuinely do not know where your daughter is and they're searching an area that she somewhat frequented? Why on earth would that come out of your mouth? And I don't think she's going to be there.
She's got a scrambled brain.
Okay.
So because of the, again, I'm not saying that she was witty or unwitty. I don't think she's consciously allowing herself to acknowledge the reality that's what's going on right now. Mm-hmm. Because of the boyfriend's, the partner's cell phone data showing that the abuse for her started at least
2 years.
From documented on his cell phone 2 years prior. That's 2 years of hiding shit. Excuse my language.
No, you're fine.
And that completely scrambles the brain, because the shame she feels as a mother and as a human being over what she doesn't want to believe is going on and the choices that she's making for her daughter's life is completely putting her brain in conflict. And so we're seeing, you're completely right with her nonverbal expressions, her tells, lots of stress, lots of confusion, lots of subterfuge. There's a lot of that going on. But I think it's also, I think the origin of it isn't necessarily from the death of her daughter yet. Mm-hmm. I think she's still stuck on at least 2 years prior to that of what she's doesn't want to acknowledge is going on in her life and might have been a pattern in her life as well, even prior to that. And so anytime a human being goes through trauma, becomes addicted, or any of these horrendous malformations in the brain and unhealthy behaviors, our emotional progression stops at that point and it kind of swirls around there. And this is my pseudoscience, you know, YouTube, you know, clinical mind going in my background.
You need to put on like a lab coat and a hat and have like a scepter. I don't know why, but just get really Bill Nye, but kind of get, I don't know.
Yeah. But so here's my bottom line on that one. If you were to put her on a polygraph, which measures physiological responses to questions and stimuli, there's a decent probability, because she's lying, been deceiving herself about what the truth is that's going on, she'll likely possibly pass it, or at least come in definitely inconclusive on it because of all these mixed emotions she's having, because she's hiding from herself. She's hiding from the actions and behaviors that she's been witness to that she doesn't want to believe. Again, that's my conjecture on this one.
Yeah.
Just because it is, you hear it coming out of her, as you so well put, everything coming out is a jumble. Her brain is in jumble mode. And so then you ask, what's caused jumble mode? Is it the current event, which is part of it? But that current event, I think it's a culmination of at least 2 years of crazy.
Yeah.
At least 2 years of crazy.
I mean, does that explain no tears? I mean, because I mean, both of them in the interviews, no red eyes, so matter-of-factly talking about this, you know. They're doing the wiping of the eyes. That's always interesting to me when there's no tears. Right. You know, is it because basically she's emotionally dead? And I'm just kind of, you know, being, you know, flippant a little bit, but essentially that's what I mean, where just emotions have been so fried, because if she had knowledge that her partner was sexually abusing her daughter for 2 years and didn't do anything about it, or sat and pretended it wasn't happening, because I find it nearly impossible to believe that there was no knowledge or no suspicion in a small apartment that they're all sharing that this was happening.
I totally agree. She's completely aware of what was going on, but not acknowledging it or wanting to believe it. So she's put herself in a make-believe world to be able to survive the trauma she's chosen to put her daughter in and herself.
So it's almost,
And I'm sorry. And to your point, I think she's emotionally numb at this point.
Yeah. Where then it's like when I'm just trying to think of an analogy here. It's like, okay, if you fry an electronic, you plug it into something, too much power goes into it, electrocutes, it doesn't work anymore correctly, but maybe it turns on or something. So when it does come time to emote, when your daughter is missing, and you're calling for those emotions mentally, your body's not giving them to you because you've already been so fried by the trauma and the damage. And that's why you're not presenting in a way that a healthy individual would to such news.
Exactly right. She's not presenting as a healthy individual should respond to such news, because that is a broken brain right there. It'll be interesting once this starts going to trial, because this is going to go to trial, once we find out more about the boyfriend and partner that did all the sexual abuse, and we start seeing the tendrils and the text messages and emails and correspondence and all the other people that they're touching the lives of, I think that's when we're going to start getting a fuller picture of the depth of what was going on and for how long, and potentially not just with this girl and this one victim. I mean, I'd have no idea about any other relationships because there hasn't been put out there. But as we know, you don't go from 0 to 100. This will not be, my guess is this will not be the only child this guy abused.
Yeah. It doesn't work that way.
No, it does not work that way. And so I think as we start seeing the tendrils here, and I think we're going to start seeing a behavior pattern with the mother as well, with prior boyfriends, with prior, again, this is not throwing her under the bus. Yeah. There's a lot of trauma going on here that causes someone to make the choices they do in life and cause complete destruction of other people's lives. And I think this is going to be one of those cases. We're going to see a lot of pain and destruction along the way.
Want to listen ad-free? Want advanced access to all of our interviews before anyone else?
Become a True Crime Today Premium Plus subscriber on Apple Podcasts.
You get every episode commercial-free,
so you can binge on true crime
until you can binge no more.
Search True Crime Today Premium Plus on Apple Podcasts now, or go to our podcast page and sign up now.
More of the Hidden Killers podcast next.